Every once in a while, we have to bring out the big dog.
Yeah.
Oh, God help us. It's time for Danny Unleashed.
Oh.
Sponsored by Easton Roofing, where integrity matters. Go to EastonRoofing.com for more.
Yes, indeed. Our man Danny Klinkscale. Danny Unleashed, brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. You just heard it. Integrity, it matters. Throw a little love to our buddy Joe, proprietor of Easton Roofing, as he has... Who dinked? Oh, that was me. I was trying to play a video. Sorry. My bad.
Who dinked? Oh, it was me.
Fries are done. Ding, fries are done. Ding, fries are done.
No, I went fries.
Yeah, I know. That's what happens. That's the problem with you know, doing that little joke. But the... fine proprietor, Joe Spiker. I had a little surgery.
Yeah.
So, you know.
On the mend. On the way back.
Yeah, just you know, on his spine.
He sent me a funny text the other day. He had some titanium put in there.
Right. I saw it, too.
Yeah.
He sent me the same one.
He said, they told me when I was young, work construction, the money's good. But he's doing fine, and he's feeling good. You know, obviously, it's a rough go, but
yes,
he's feeling better. I just texted him just a few minutes ago, as a matter of fact. So during this crazy day today, crazy but fun, I'll tell you what. I've had a day today.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was over at Sporting today for their press conference for Alan Pulido, their new striker. Was it?
It's Alon.
Alon Pulido.
I believe it's pronounced Alon.
Alon.
Come on, you know, I'm a name expert.
Well, okay. Alon. You know what? Everybody was speaking Spanish today, so I didn't know whether, you know, when we spoke English, Nate was showing off his Spanish chops. So it was kind of fun. But anyway,
I had to unravel.
Nate has chops?
Some person, I'll use another adjective later.
Right.
Decided a good way to store headphones is to these are the dumbasses that wrap the cord around it real tight.
The tighter you wrap the headphones, you know, it's better for them.
No. You don't mess with the cord. Put it all in the container and just leave it. You know, wrap it up. It's not a freaking weed whacker that you got to load up, you dumbass.
So anyway, I was there also to tape an edition of sponsored by Easton Roofing Kansas City Profiles for Friday. And it was Peter Vermees. And it is part of what will be a fantastic profile, because I suspected that we were going to go nowhere near fitting it into the time frame allotted, and that was absolutely the case. Fantastic tales of his childhood and his parents coming over from Hungary, and really fascinating stuff and funny. And
about the most candid person in a position of power I can remember in this city.
Oh, and just, you know, circuitous routes to the tales. And
yeah. the detail he remembers about things. Whenever he tells stories, when he's almost running with things about games, there's always four or five things you'd think, how did you remember that?
Well, you know, this, obviously, you remember things about your boyhood a little bit better, but really great stuff. And so we'll be Friday, and then in a couple of weeks we'll do part two as well. So because we only get through, he's only in college at the end of the segment, at the first segment. So there's a lot of roads still to go with Peter Vermees.
Wow.
And then I was off to Lawrence to visit with Matt Llewellyn at the 23rd Street Brewery, another fine
sponsor.
You
got the tuna
app? I got the tuna.
Oh, God, so
got
good.
The tuna for Saran.
Yes, thank you.
Because I've Matt's another of the great sponsors at DannyKlinkscale.com and right here at Sports Radio 810. And I had been there a couple times recently in the last month or two on a Monday, and we had talked about the fact that and I get the tuna every time I go, too.
I get
a bowl of soup and the tuna.
Sashimi-grade tuna, yeah. And it makes a great appetizer. Right. It's wonderful.
And so I would say, you know, that's Seren's favorite. I could, you know, I do that segment tomorrow. I could take it to him. He goes, hey, you know, I want it to be fresh. I don't want it to sit overnight in the fridge. I want it to be fresh. I said, well, you know what? The next time we get together, I'll come up on Tuesday, and then I can bring the tuna right to Seren.
So and I'm it's I got it
sitting
it's
in the fridge.
Yeah, I'm gonna have some. I didn't have time to have it, but it's awesome. So
big day for me. Big
yes,
day.
Big friends.
No bigger than Danny Unleashed.
No. Thank you. I appreciate it. Which, as we said, brought to you by Eastern Roofing. They are still hiring, by the way. We mentioned this last week. Two project manager positions, a couple of sales spots, office administrator, two repair techs positions are available right now. They have 401k match, health insurance, above scale pay, guaranteed to work all winter long.
And guaranteed not to work on
opening day. Yes.
And to go to the ball game, because everybody at Eastern Roofing does.
Yeah, that is one of the little treats. It's a great place to work. And all the guys, I remember, I forget who was at my house, but talking about going to opening day when they were there to do the roof work at my house. So Eastern Roofing is a great place to work. They're a great place to have come do any work on your roof or blow that insulation in if you've got the cold roof or maybe the ice dams or the icicles hanging. That's one of the things they do a lot of this time of year. Easton Roofing. Find them online at eastonroofing.com. Danny.
And just a note of condolence for Curtis. I haven't seen the big man since Rush drummer Neil Peart.
Yep.
Passed away.
Did anybody else notice? I know Curtis, I'm sure, did. But during the Chiefs game, there was clearly a Rush fan that was involved in the production because they kept bumping out with Rush tunes.
All four games.
Really cool,
all four games this weekend, I heard multiple Rush tunes going to break. And at last night of the national championship game, I heard it won. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that will be – it'll be a another shameless plug. It's a big part of tomorrow's Danny and Tim's music scene at DannyKlinkscale.com. We'll talk about Rush and Neil Peart.
The professor.
Yes. So, and I'm not – Curtis has made me appreciate Rush more. I'm not really a fan per se. I never really could get into the voice of Geddy Lee.
Right, and that's acquired taste.
But when you
taste.
Just see the musicianship and everything, and also the respect that comes for somebody like that when they pass, and all the drummers from Stuart Copeland.
I said on Friday, how many kids in the last 40 years picked up a pair of drumsticks because they heard Neil Peart and thought, I want to do that?
And then they put them down when they tried to figure out whether they could do what he does.
Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they kept going at
Stuart
it.
Stuart Copeland's quote from the police that Tim Finn put it out on his Facebook was, the most air-drummed drummer in the history of rock music.
Man. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's great.
Anyway, on to sports.
All right. I want to touch a little bit on last night's national championship game with you. What was your takeaway? What does this season tell you? What did it all mean when it's all said and done?
Well, what it said to me is that Coach Ed Orgeron deserves some great credit because I think he knows what he does well and what he doesn't do well. And what he does well is motivate and I think instill some respect in his team. And what I think LSU, all they've ever lacked is getting a coach in there. And hey, this is their fourth national championship. It's not like they've been a bunch of stumble bums, but they've had close to, if not the best talent in the country, year after year after year. And I just think they've lacked discipline and dedication to their craft. And what I saw last night was a team that was hit in the mouth by a two-time, a team that hadn't lost in a couple of years and just were too talented and just were relentless. And also what they finally discovered was that let's play some modern football with a good quarterback and you can kick everyone's ass because they always have great receivers. Think of all the people they trotted to the NFL over the last few years while they were running 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense. So a couple of takeaways there. And I guess the other one is, if you're the best in the SEC, you're probably got a damn good chance to win the national championship if you don't screw it up. So I guess that's what I learned.
I think, number one, the value of the quarterback was was, again, magnified, that even at the college level. I think what Ed Orgeron deserves credit for is, number one, he was doing all right at Ole Miss when they let him go. Ole Miss was a – I think I learned that Ole Miss and programs like Ole Miss, which I would say are Missouri, it like 7-5 and 6-6 and, 8-4, that's not nothing.
But also, I think one of the reasons he did it is Mississippi, like per capita, has the most NFL players in the National Football League.
Per capita, per population. Yeah. Yes. They don't have a big population.
No, but they churn out a lot of tremendous talent.
They do.
And he was able to keep it at home.
He did a good job of that. Hugh Freeze was on his staff.
Right.
Right? And there are guys on that staff that would go on to do other things. But he it also, to me, says that you can learn and grow as a coach. Like, the experience, I think one of the things that stood out to me was that, you know, you get your head coaching try. If you fail, you might, maybe even probably, get a second shot at it. But then after that, everybody's out on you. Because Ed Orgeron had the Mississippi job. Did okay. I'll look up what he did there. Because my recollection is, yeah, I read the book I can't remember what it was, but it was about college football recruiting. They basically took 1 year with Ed Orgeron and the Mississippi staff on the recruiting trail, and that's what the book was. And it was a really interesting book, and the meetings that they would have and the time and energy went into. Let's see. I know he didn't do as well as I thought. 3-8, 4-8, 3-9. So they fired him.
But I think they played good football after he left.
Yeah, because the talent that he had, he did leave some talent there. And then at USC, he went 6-2 after taking over for Lane Kiffin when Lane Kiffin was fired, and really wanted the job, and a lot of people there wanted him to get the job, and they didn't give it to him. And he 13 was Lane Kiffin he moved in for, right?
I think that's right.
And then Clay Helton got it later. I have to look back. Anyway, point is. So the idea was that he was like this retread who,
So was Kiffin.
Okay. He's always known as a great recruiter and a great defensive line coach, but not a head coach. And he had been labeled that. And to me, he clearly, what he did really well here was, one, he used the resources of LSU. He spent money like it was nobody's business. They had money to give him. They really don't in that state or that university, but they're going to spend it on their football team. And so he spent it on great locker rooms.
They don't care about no Burke learning down there.
Yeah.
They want to win football games.
So he did that. He kept the facilities on par. He recruited really well, but he went out and he used that money to get really good coaches.
Yeah. I mean, they have – this is the kind of money the SEC teams spit around. They have a coach who calls the plays on first and second down – and then the offensive coordinator calls the plays on third down. So it's like, what? Where is the second down coach?
I don't even buy that. Maybe it was because he was grief-stricken in that SEC championship game, but the older coach, the offensive coordinator, not the passing game coordinator, didn't seem to be calling any plays when they kept putting the camera on him in the booth.
Right.
But.
Might be an Andy Reid thing where he called the plays in the second half.
Yeah,
I didn't buy ever.
Steve Ensminger.
Yeah, he seemed to be more active last night than he was in the SEC championship game. So it may have been that he's the coach that's daughter-in-law passed away,
right,
in a plane crash right before the SEC championship game. But anyway, Meat Market, by the way, is the name of the book. It's called Meat Market. It's about recruiting. It's a good one. Bruce Feldman wrote it.
He's good. He's a good writer.
Yeah, and so. But he put a great staff around him. Now, if you were to bet, will he win another championship?
From what I saw last night, I guess the answer should always be no, because it's hard to win the national championship. But
you pretty much bet no on Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney winning another one, and the math is probably with you. They're about the only two guys that might burn you.
But I was impressed with what I saw last night. I was impressed with what I saw this season. Of course, you got a special quarterback. He's not going to be there, but they always are going to have high.
Derek King from Houston just entered the transfer portal yesterday. He announced that during the game, the Houston kid.
We'll see where he goes. Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that they have a chance maybe to get on a little run.
I think they do, but he's got to get the quarterback right again.
Sure.
Because that's what won the game yesterday.
Right.
It was Burrow. I mean, he had the best player on the field.
Certainly. And Trevor Lawrence didn't play particularly well in the game.
Right, so, and I think the LSU defense had a lot to do with
sure
it.
Sure it did.
But I don't think he'll get Burrow again. And the real trick, the real impressive thing that Nick Saban does is he keeps replacing the coaches. Right? His assistants go and go and go. He's got a magical dream team in place at LSU. They will all be – the kid will be gone.
Right.
Because unless you're going to fire the old man and make him OC, but somebody's going to give him a head coaching job. He may skip the OC category and get a gig. I mean, Mizzou may have wanted to have invested in him.
Right, although aren't we done for this year? So aren't these guys going to be around next year?
No, they'll be around next year, yeah, but with no quarterback.
Right.
And then by the time you get another quarterback, that's experience, because Burrow in his junior year wasn't the same thing he was in his senior year.
Free agency. I'm not saying there's –
No, if they get King next year, yes, they could be.
His backup is Miles Brennan, who will be a fourth-year junior next season. They could bring King in for 1 year, and then I guess could Brennan play the year after.
And then maybe they become quarterback U and everybody wants to go there. Yeah, we'll see. No, I don't put it out of the realm of possibility at all. But I do think that the next thing – that you have to do as a coach is then still win when you don't have your crew.
Right.
Yeah.
Nick Saban wins with guys. He had no idea who the hell they were when he took the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he keeps finding the right guys. And I think that's the next trick to sustaining it. Cause you're going to lose all your coaches.
Right.
If you win, they get jobs.
Right. Well, but as you said, they have the resources to look around the country and cherry pick the best.
They had him with Les Miles there.
Right. So they can, you know, but it's your job to pick out the right guys, you know, and identify the right guys. I mean, that quarterback coach, I'm sure he was some kind of low-level assistant somewhere. And they said,
he was offensive quality control or something with the Saints?
M. Singer?
No, that's the OC, the guy, right, the wonder kid.
The younger guy.
Joe
right.
Brady?
Joe Brady.
Joe Brady. Was with the Saints,
right?
As I don't remember what his title was,
but quality control coach. I mean,
yeah, it was more than that. I think. What was it?
You still have to identify.
I guess his offensive assistant.
Yeah. Okay. Just an offensive assistant for the Saints. But,
so you just have to identify some young cat who's got it going.
Offensive assistant.
And you know that's the trick.
Yeah.
But I think he has some other things in place. I think his players are kind of. I think he carries because of his oft imitated gruff exterior and. Etc. I think he's a motivator, and I think there's a little fear factor there too. He looks like he can kick your ass still,
He can.
Yeah. So
he's a big dude, and he's not fat. By the way, the 2 years after he left, you mentioned the struggles he had at Ole Miss. In 2008, he was replaced by Houston Nutt. That team went 9-4, won the Cotton Bowl. The next year, 9-4, won the Cotton Bowl.
Right.
So the talent was in place when he left there in 2007.
So Ole Miss may have ejected a little quick.
Yes.
I know he's the guy who got Dexter McCluster and who mm-hmm. was really the guy Houston Nutt ran into the ground there.
You don't get 3 years of losing in the SEC.
You don't. You probably should.
Maybe you should, but you don't.
If you're at those programs that aren't, Tennessee and up, you probably need to be a little more patient.
I'm not saying that's
right. No,
you're
but
not
your
right.
point's taken. Yeah. Well, yeah. Good point. My next point about last night is yes, please, to either one of the running backs. I'd like to see, and I actually think Clyde Edwards-Helaire, what do they list him at? 5'8". That's generous. I would love to see him in a Chiefs uniform. I think that kid is perfect for Andy Reid.
And at that expanded
ETN,
height, he's probably not going to go that
right.
high. He's probably getting fourth or fifth round.
Yep.
And I think ETN would look really nice as well. I think he's a stud.
I've only seen one mock that has him in the first round, and it did have the Chiefs taking him at, I think, 31. USA Today did one after the divisional playoffs, and where they put them down there. But
I hope ETN comes out and runs him like a 4.55. Falls to the third round ETN's going to run high. I'm sorry, not ETN.
The other guy?
The other kid, Edwards-Helaire. I hope he comes out and runs him a 4.55 because he looks like he runs like a shorter Kareem Hunt. I'll take that kid.
Well, you're talking about, the highest level of competition these guys play against. And, also, the thing that makes it a little bit easier for talent evaluators in the NFL – of course, they have to decide whether the coaches are not boobs, but they got to beat out a lot of people just to get on the field at these programs. I mean, to become the primary mm-hmm. ball carrier at LSU, you're sending a lot of talented fellas to the bench. So that
ETN's the all-time career rushing leader at Clemson in 3 years.
3,100 yards and 43 TDs in 2 years at Clemson, and he was good against good teams. I mean, he didn't always rush
like
for 100 yards, but he had
like a wide receiver.
In 14 for 109 against Notre Dame in the national semifinal. Had 3 touchdowns against Alabama in the championship game last year. And even though he didn't rush really well against Ohio State, he did have three for 98 and two scores through the air. He finds the freaking end zone. He's great in red zone stuff.
He's got 4,000 yards on the ground in 3 years. And as Curtis said, almost 3,300 in the last two. Well, yards per carry by year, 7.2, 8.1, 7.8.
Is that good? Those are high school numbers.
And this year he really caught the ball. Yards per catch, I mean, the first year, 5 for 57, 11.4. Last year, 12 for 78, 6.5, and two touchdowns. This year, 37 for 432, 11.7. Out of the backfield.
Certainly a position of need for the Chiefs. Well, I guess.
And,
if any position on offense is a position of need for the Chiefs.
But. Say they don't have what defensive player, whoever they want, they can trade back into the early second.
Trade,
he'd
do what?
Still be there.
Do what?
trade down.
Trade what?
Trade back.
Trade back?
Trade back.
I don't think that is not on the keyboard of Brett Veach.
He might surprise you. He needs to start learning it. Yes.
Thinking about that option.
I'm in full agreement on that one. Their needs actually are, in my opinion, running back, tight end, wide receiver, guard, and center. I think they're actually plentiful. I think 15 just makes up for a lot of it. They need wide receiver because DeMarcus Robinson and Sam. I think they're going to cut Sammy Watkins, and DeMarcus Robinson's a free agent. And have you seen anything that makes you think you need to lay out a fat contract for him?
That certainly wasn't a prime audition the other day.
No. So you
dropped one and then just kept on dropping them.
Yep. So you've only got two of your four wideouts that I think are going to be back. I think at some point Kelsey's going to get old at some point. You need to start looking at a tight end. Doesn't have to be in the first round. I think left guard and center are less than ideal situations right now. And they need a running back. So I think they actually have plenty of needs. I think 15 just covers them all up.
I know. I guess that's my point. You know, do you have to worry about it that much? Because, sure, you'd like to have hell on wheels at every position, but we still don't know if the defense is all fixed. I mean, clearly it's better, but they could use some linebackers, I think.
Nah.
When what would have to happen for you to say, okay, the defense is good?
A big part of it would be in a close game, a good performance against a stout rushing team this week. That would do a lot for me. Because the competition down the stretch when, you know, these numbers were being piled up was pretty weak. And the Chiefs have started to revert to the mode of killing games by being ahead so that you can't play the way you want to play.
Yes, we're just evaluating the defense.
Teams they can't commit to the run, which is really still the best way to try and beat the Chiefs.
All
controlling
right.
the game, controlling the clock, keeping Patrick Mahomes off the field. Still the best way. It's no guarantee, but it's still the best prescription.
But the Colts, Texans, and Titans all played it that way, and that's how they won.
Right.
Packers kind of controlled it with Aaron Jones out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, that is, I agree, that is your recipe for success, but it doesn't guarantee you're going to win.
No,
like you said,
not.
You would have thought 24-0 is a perfect spot for that, but Houston got hit with the counterpunch so quickly they didn't have a chance to even get it going.
But I want to consider this, and we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about it. Are the Chiefs now, if they go on and they win 40-20, you know, or maybe it's 34-17 over the Titans and then 40-20 over the Niners. Is this the new way to play ball? It's that you do, like, your defense, the most important thing, good defense, the most important part of a good defense is a good offense.
Well,
just think about it. Think about it. We'll take a break.
If you can pull it off, because what we've seen in the playoffs
we'll take
are a lot of
low. I'm still saying we'll take a break. So then we'll come back and we'll talk about it. Go ahead, hit the button.
The program with Soren Petro.
You know, I don't know. I don't know.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour answer. Derrick Henry has back-to-back postseason games with 30 carries. Who was the last player to have three in a row in the postseason?
John Riggins.
It's not bad. In the same
Apparently
postseason,
mm-hmm.
or can it stretch out over multiples?
No, it had to be in the same season.
So they had to get to the Super Bowl or conference championship game. 30 carries.
Well, 30 carries and three strikes.
So John Riggins is wrong.
I was going to let him guess. John Riggins is right. But if you wanted to guess,
I'm going to go with Riggins.
It was John Riggins.
Nailed
it. In 1982, remember they had an extra round of playoffs that year because
of
the strike.
Yeah, because of the strike. When you were looking at me, I'm like, okay, he's thinking strike year. So then I'm like, well, either Riggins is right or O.J. Anderson, but they didn't win enough games to play in three.
Yeah, he did it in each of the first three games, did not have 30 carries, or did have 30 carries in Super Bowl. So I guess he missed the first game with the last three 30 carries. The fewest number of rushing yards.
You know, they
by
called him the Diesel.
He was.
I've got two fantastic John Riggins stories, if you want to hear either one.
First, let me tell you the fewest yards rushing for a 30 carry back in a playoff game. I love this. Lamar Miller of the Houston Texans, 31 for 73.
It's a tough day.
They committed to the run.
They kept on feeding them.
Couldn't do
kept
it.
Kept on feeding them.
Let me ask you a question. Did they win that game?
They did.
Did they really?
Yes. In fact, there are 39 players in pro postseason history who have had 30 carries in a super playoff game. They are 39-0. No team has ever lost when their running back had 30 carries in a postseason game.
Really?
Yeah. 39-0. Since 1950.
Yeah, I guess when you go back, when everybody was running, if you're running that many times, you probably had 50 plays to 20.
Yeah, and you're probably winning and running a lot in the third and fourth quarter.
The
little breakdown of what if Henry's 13-0.
Especially if you probably don't even care if you're gaining that much yardage.
Yeah. In five of the 13 games that he ran for 100 yards, they never trailed. So that does help.
That it does.
You want to hear either one of these stories or none? You can say none.
How long? Because I'd like to finish the thought process that we had going
there.
Sure.
I'll tell one.
All right, let's hear it.
Second day, and this isn't the best one, but it's probably the best suitable for air.
Wow.
But
I got a lot of great stories that have no hope of getting on the radio, Danny. I don't tease you.
No, there's hope, but I'd have to clean it. I could have done it, but I couldn't. Okay. But anyway, second day on campus at the University of Kansas for me. And so I'm coming from Massachusetts. I'd never set foot out in New England until the day I went to college. So I go out there, and we do the thing where you go to Allen Fieldhouse to get your classes. So then we're done at like 3 o'clock. A couple of guys say, hey, let's go to the wheel. You know, I didn't even drink beer then. I soon would, but I didn't then. So I walk in. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. There's two huge men sitting at a picnic table at the wheel. The Hawk. It was the Hawk. And there's a picnic table inside. And they're wearing bib overalls, and that's it. They have mohawks and bib overalls. And it's John and Junior Riggins.
Mm-hmm.
And they each have in front of them one of those giant old-fashioned glass pitchers. And they are drinking it like a glass of beer.
Yes.
Like those giant 64-ouncers, you know, weigh about 5 pounds to pick up. And I said, well, this is a little different.
Culture shock.
I don't think I'd ever seen bib overalls, even, to be honest, at that point in my
drinking
life.
Drinking out of a pitcher of beer.
I don't know what day it was. It's one of the first weekends. Actually, I was 17 when I went to college, so I think I had to get like a fake ID to be 18 to get into the 18, what was it, 18 to party, 21 to drink or whatever.
Yeah, that's we had in Kansas, too.
When I first got there, the bars were like that. It would soon change to where you had to be 21, but my first year there. I don't know how I got in at 17, but I got in somehow. And I'm up at the bar ordering drinks. Then you copied the stamp and everybody sold to you. So I'm up there buying. And I'm getting like two or three drinks for me and my friends. And I'm there, and all of a sudden this big hand slaps down on my shoulder. And on my right shoulder, and I look over that way. And, of course, he's on the left side because he's that big and he reaches around. And I look up, and it's Derek Coleman. Right, senior year, going to be the number one pick in the draft later that year. Slaps his hand on my shoulder, and then with his left hand, he was left-handed, so he puts his right hand on my right shoulder, slaps it, and he's over onto the left side of me, and he points at me, huge hands, right? Points at me. This round's on you, little man.
Nice.
And what are you going to do?
I bought a round. Him and Billy Owens, who would go third in the next draft,
right.
Had drinks on me.
Very nice.
So
very
there
nice.
You go, yeah. That round was fantastic. On me.
At that moment in time, I was no more than 40 miles away from that spot. No doubt. Because I was in Utica, New York. Then.
It was at, what was that place called? That wasn't Sutter's Mill. It went on to be about, it was Fagan's. No. It doesn't matter who here cares.
For all the Syracuse.
Nobody cares.
Syracuse
Murphy's is, I think, what it was. nobody cares. I'm sorry. I digress. All right, back to what we were babbling about earlier that you insisted upon trying to answer at that time. Is it possible that we're seeing that, like when we talk about the Chiefs moving forward, but it applies to this year, that the modern game, everyone believes you throw to win, like the numbers guys, throw to win, run when you're winning, offense wins, right? You want to be great on defense, but the priority is you have to have a great offense. That's where the math guys are. Maybe the Titans are going to debunk that whole thing and run all the way to a championship.
Or the Niners. They're running the football a lot.
They are running the football a lot, but their offense hasn't been bad this year. It's been pretty damn good.
No, it's been good. I'm just saying your assessment was more of a high-flying offense. I don't think the design of the 49ers is to go out and score 40. I mean, their offense is good. And it's not like they haven't scored 40. They put 40 on the Packers in the regular season, I believe, in their matchup.
49ers, well, that's in the playoffs, third highest scoring in the playoffs in the regular season.
So I see where you're going, but
49ers were the second highest scoring team in football.
But they did it in a way that I guess was different than I thought you were trying to,
Well, I just think offense. I mean, I think offense and throwing is more important than running. I will say that.
Agreed.
You don't want to not be able to run. But, the Chiefs roared back with 1 yard rushing.
That was just the Chiefs game was just a weird game.
Let's be honest. I agree. It's an outlier that you're normally not going to hang 28. I'm pretty sure that's where. Look at the end of the first quarter stats, would you, Curtis, and tell me where they were rushing. That maybe Mahomes had gone off on his 21-yard run because I remember I tweeted out, well, that's 20. He just had 21 times as much rushing as the Chiefs had. It was three carries for 1 yard.
Right.
Damian Williams.
Yeah. Well into the game.
After one quarter,
everybody
had 3 yards.
Well, much later than that.
What was the Chiefs' rushing total after one quarter?
3 yards. Two carries for 3 yards.
Oh, I think even later in the game.
Must have got stopped for a minus one because at one point, Damian Williams had 3 carries for 1 yard, and then Patrick Mahomes ran for 21.
Yeah. I know for at one point in the game.
Or maybe they've corrected some numbers there. They've gone back, and sometimes they'll be like,
And it wasn't that early either. Besides Mahomes, they had 1 yard rushing. I remember them saying that on the broadcast.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, but that game was so weird and odd. I mean, there were short fields all over the place for both offenses.
There were turnovers that equaled out, and to me, we got a fair representation of how these two teams match up.
I totally agree with that. What I'm saying is that trying to, the Chiefs scored 3 touchdowns in 3 minutes. And that just doesn't happen that often. That's why the dynamics of the game and talking
but that,
about
but that's what I'm asking each, you, Danny. That's my point. It doesn't happen that often because we're measuring it against the last 99 years of the NFL. But I'm telling you to look over the horizon at the next 20, and I think it will happen more often because I think that's where the game is going. That's what I'm saying.
But the 3 touchdowns, what, 2 of them were on short fields, right?
Yes, if you get 3 scores in 3 minutes, their turnovers were involved.
Right.
But their ability to strike and score. I mean, everyone's talking about, they're not as good as the red zone. And nobody ever says, and maybe I drive people crazy by constantly adding in, but I think to tell the whole story, they're not as good in the red zone. And they've had massive injuries all year. Tyreek Hill misses the first 5 games. Patrick Mahomes misses 3 games. Left tackle misses 6 games, 5 games already missed. Left guard misses games. Right tackle goes down in a game. They have battled through. Sammy Watkins missed a couple of games. That's why they're not as good. Now they're at full strength,
but you
saw what they can do in the red zone.
Well, my point is when the Chiefs are healthy, they may have one of the greatest offenses ever put together. So trying to make that your model for how to play football might be a really bad idea.
Well, I think football is almost a sad proposition for fans because I lived it for 47 years of my life when you don't have the franchise quarterback. And I would call Deshaun Watson a franchise quarterback. In Kansas City, I think they have more than that. We have a quarterback in this town that is conceivably the best ever. He's going to go into conversations for the best ever. I have no doubt about it. Just like I had no doubt he was going to be good when I saw him at Texas Tech, I have no doubt. I didn't know he was going to be to this degree. Like, I thought he might be Deshaun Watson. I thought he might be more because his arm talent is insane. But arm talent, Jeff George and Jay Cutler had arm talent, and they weren't great. So they just got all the intangibles too. There's no doubt that he takes him to the next level. But I truly believe there's always going to be, like, Joe Burrow's coming. Is he as good as Mahomes? No. But is he going to be pretty good? Yeah. Deshaun Watson's here. Like, you're not going to go beat the Texans 9-7. And I exaggerate. Whoa, no, I'm not talking about 9-7. Okay, but games aren't going to be played in the upper teens. We're close to the games not being played in the lower 20s. So any concept of, like, well, we've got to get the defense to where we can hold people to 19 a game, I think is a fool's errand. I think you've got to make sure that you have firepower first and foremost, because you can still win that way. If you have no offense, you can't win.
Well, it's a better way to win if you can pull it off, because, yes, the way the rules are, the way passive interference is called, the way defensive holding is called, I mean, making first downs is not hard work anymore. So that's the easiest way. But you have to have the guy, and there's 32 teams.
So,
yeah. You know, that's... No,
I agree. And to me, the Titans are doing what they have to do with what right. they've got. And maybe you can steal one, the Ravens in 12. But more often than not, it's Manning, it's Brady, it's Roethlisberger. Let's go through.
Sure.
You ready to hear the number by yards? This is by yards, right? We'll do points, too. Here are the top defenses in the NFL by yards. You tell me when you hear one that's still playing. New England Patriots, San Francisco 49ers, Buffalo Bills, Baltimore Ravens, Pittsburgh Steelers, Los Angeles Chargers, New York Jets, Chicago Bears, Dallas Cowboys, Philadelphia Eagles, New Orleans Saints, Denver Broncos, Los Angeles Rams, Minnesota Vikings, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Indianapolis Colts, Kansas City Chiefs. It's 17. Right? Isn't that where they ended up?
Yes.
Well, they get a little better than that, too.
I thought,
four,
I think.
6. 8, 10, 12, right. 14, 16, 17.
Yeah.
Green Bay Packers, 18. Oakland Raiders, Atlanta Falcons, Tennessee Titans, 21. 17, 18, and 21 are still firing. Now, if the Niners kick the holy living crap out of the Packers again, and then they slap the Chiefs or Titans, meh. It was kind of an anomaly that other defenses didn't get there. But if the Niners don't beat the Packers, then let's recognize what's really important.
Well, right, and the 49ers, to me, absolutely have the best team in the National Football League.
Besides
the other 21 players,
starters, yeah.
They're the best team. And I don't think it's that close, really. They got young talent all over the field, and, you know, especially on defense. And so their front office should, you know, get the kudos for –
for that,
that,
yeah. And if they lose to the Packers, it's a one-game deal. But if they lose to the Packers, then we go, you need to get the most important position right.
60.
That's what I'm saying. It's almost boring, because when you don't have that quarterback, you pretty much can't win.
It's like 60 years ago, a Cro-Magnon football coach named Vince Lombardi famously said, football's the ultimate team game, except for the quarterback. He's too important.
Too damn important.
Right. And that's when you're talking about Super Bowls that were played where guys threw 11 passes.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bart Starr didn't throw.
Bob Greasy was 6 of 7 when they won their second championship. 6 of 7.
Oh, hell, and Joe Namath didn't even, whatever he was in that. What was Namath?
He threw it a bit in that game, actually.
Yeah, a bit? Like what, 16 times?
I think he was 17 of 28. 17
did he get to that many?
Yeah. Yeah.
Although you mentioned the short drives that Chiefs had, some of the short, right? On Sunday. They did go 42, 33, and 6. The other four?
Oh, yeah, they were long.
90, 85, 77, 72.
What'd they say during the broadcast? The Chiefs have had, what, they've gone 50% on drives of over 90 yards this year. When they've had to go 90 yards, they've scored a touchdown half the time.
Which speaks to why Bill O'Brien ran the fake punt.
Right. I you know, you and I are on the similar pages as far as the as those two things are concerned. I could have lived without the fake punt.
I could too.
I totally understand the field goal. It took an outstanding play by Sorensen to not have the fake punt work. He said after the game, I think it was a bit of hyperbole, that we thought we were going to have to score 50 going in.
That's because he ended up losing to a team that scored 51.
Scored 50, right. So, it is that we've gotten to the point where, on Twitter, people are enraged that the Chiefs punted on 4th and 5 early in the game. come on now. It's not arena football. And the other thing that people always assume is that, Stan Weber said this to me the other day, he said, it's as if people think they hand you 7 points if you convert 4th and 1. You still have to go do something. The Titans right. were not going to score. Now, they were at the 10, but they still were going to have to score a touchdown. And converting on 4th and 1 guarantees nothing except you get more downs. So you shouldn't. It's not like you should do it all the time.
That being said,
you should do it more than they do.
Like the Texans, to me, had to say our secondary sucks, and this guy's going to carve us up.
I do agree with that, but the point was the electrifying way that the game turned exposed them more than they would have if they could have kept it to be a normal game for about
right.
5 more minutes. They may have been able to play the game that would have given the Chiefs only 4 or 5 more possessions, and even if they just could have held them to a field goal or two in that, they still could have won.
But they
just got murdered.
Here's what
that.
I think a lot of fans and a lot of numbers guys, and we'll talk to Eric Eager on Thursday. We'll see what he says. He's coming to town, too. He'll be with us in the pregame, Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show on Sunday. But I think what a lot of fans have said, and what I think it should be discussed, is down 24-0, did it force Andy Reid's hand to play the way he should play all the time? And I tend to think, yeah, you're not – like, they ran when Houston's will was broken. I mean, 10 up with 13 to go is a we-need-7 moment for the Chiefs.
Right.
Like, they've got to do that.
And I think –
it's what
and
they're
it's
built
confirm.
To do. I don't understand why you build this dragster and then you want to run a Formula One race with it. You got the big fat tires on the back. Go fast in a straight line.
Right, yeah.
You know, don't change what it is you're trying to do. You built this thing. Now do that thing. He completes 66% of his passes. He only threw 5 interceptions all year with tons and tons of attempts. You're not being a madman by throwing the ball with Patrick Mahomes up 10 and 7 to go.
And to confirm your
you're giving yourself the best chance to stay on the field.
Right.
In Damian Williams' next carry, he did lose 2 yards. And
okay.
when Patrick Mahomes scrambled for 21 yards in the last play before the 2-minute warning, the Chiefs, before that play, had 3 carries for 1 yard.
Right.
With 2 minutes left in the first half. And at that point, it was 24-21
now,
already.
That was also part of what dug him at 24-0. Had they run better, maybe they convert. Maybe they're not having to throw to Travis Kelce and he drops the ball and you get the punt blocked.
Right.
There's an element. I mean, it's not ideal, but they led 28-24 with a yard rushing.
From their running back.
Yeah, period.
No, it was still 24-21 at that point.
It was 24-21, okay.
But then he ran
on a scramble,
yes.
on a pass play.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. On a passing play, he ran.
Actual running plays. They had 1 yard in the first half.
Yeah, so.
And we're up 28-24.
We'll take a break. Danny Klingskill's here. It's Danny Unleashed. It's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. They are hiring right now. Go to eastonroofing.com. All positions, one of the fastest growing companies in Kansas City, is Easton Roofing. If you want to have steady work all through the winter, 401k healthcare, that's Easton Roofing. Go to eastonroofing.com.
The program with Soren Petro.
Whoa. I'll never drink another beer.
Beer here.
I'll take that.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
So, Danny, what happens on Sunday? The Chiefs win?
Oh, yeah, I think the Chiefs win. I'd be very surprised if they didn't, but, the Titans just have to muddy up the game. They have to muddy up the game early on and get to the middle of the second quarter and make it, the type of game that they want to play. They're capable of it, but if the Chiefs get ahead by 10, they're probably going to win by 20 or more. But the Titans are playing tough, physical football. They believe in themselves. They've just beaten 2 teams on the road. They will come in with plenty of confidence and plenty of toughness. Chiefs can take it away with, the Chiefs are a finesse team, the Titans are a tough team. And the Chiefs are probably better at being in a finesse team. So, yes, I think they win.
All right, Danny Klingscale, Danny Unleashed. You can check him out at DannyKlingscale.com, brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Find them online at EastonRoofing.com. Danny, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
End of the hour question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, who's the only team to win the Super Bowl while being shut out in the second half? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.